And now another no-brainer money-saving tip from Progressive.
Marcus, what happened?
I was changing my oil and I spilled some on the floor.
Oh, well, use these $50 bills to wipe it up.
Perfect. Got any more?
Yeah, take a couple hundred.
Stop. Instead of using money, use an old rag. And here's a better tip from Progressive on how not to waste money. Don't pay too much for car insurance. Drivers who switch and save could save hundreds. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary.
Thank you to everyone who supports the show and all the shows at the Major Spoilers Podcast Network. Look, if you got a couple bucks kicking around in your pocket that's just being like, spend me. Your favorite podcasters need your support right now, and I'm just sitting here doing nothing. If that's what your money is saying to you, first of all, it's totally okay if your money wants to talk to you. Nothing wrong with that.
Just don't talk back.
Don't talk back, exactly. Instead, get rid of that accursed money that's talking to you by going over and becoming a patron at patreon.com/majorspoilers. We could certainly use some of that money to help us grow and continue to pay all the fantastic people here at the Major Spoilers Podcast Network. And I'm just going to say thank you in advance.
The Major Spoilers Podcast covers news, reviews, and of course, spoilers, and goes into details about the topics discussed. So if you haven't read, listened, or watched the items we talk about, you might want to come back later.
I'm Matthew.
I'm Ashley.
I'm Rodrigo.
And I'm Steven, and you're listening to the Major Spoilers Podcast, the podcast for pop culture and comic fans.
In this issue, Wade and Samney sing this song, doo-dar, doo-dar, make Black Widow all day long for the MSP. Plus, we talk aliens, Fast and Furious, Red Sonja, Fortnite, and oh, so very much more. If it's new and hot, it's a topic we got, and we're all cute as heck in an all-audio format. So let's have ourselves some fun while we talk the pop culture talk, because the Major Spoilers Podcast is on the air.
Welcome to issue 933 of the Major Spoilers Podcast. Thank you so much for downloading and joining us this week. If you missed the pre-show, I talked about some damage to the Major Spoilers HQ. I talked about some comic book art, and we talked a little bit, just briefly, about Ashley's trip to the Sequoia National Forest. A lot of fun. But you're going to want to stick around. I think we've got a lot of fun stuff coming up this week. We've got some news coming up in a moment, reviews, and then with the Black Widow movie coming out, we're going to go and take a look at the first volume of Black Widow, Shield's Most Wanted, from Marvel Comics later in the show. But as I promised, and as I mentioned, here is some news.
Speaking of the movies, movie theaters are opening for their first major weekend since 2019, which I think was last week. I think it's called Nine Fast, Nine Furious, the ninth installment. F9. The ninth installment of the Fast and the Furious franchise has grossed $374 million since opening, with expectations of surpassing $500 million, which is half a billion, by the end of the week. In a rare confluence, Universal Pictures had all three of the top three films at the box office. They had F9, they had Boss Baby Part 2, taking second place with $20 million, and The Forever Purge, which, God, it seems like it took forever, opening with $15 million.
Well, you know, Rodrigo, it is all about family. And here at the Major Spoilers Podcast, it's all about family.
Yeah, I would have never. I mean, I saw the original. Well, not the original, because The Fast and the Furious is a remake, first off. But the original Fast and the Furious, and never in a thousand years would I be like, ah, yes, there's a nine movie franchise in this, in this film. What? And it really goes to show just that, like, how they've continued to sort of, like, it's like cars and family is the theme, and like they just switch out stuff out from under it and like on top of it to like sort of keep up with modern trends. Yeah.
A 20-year franchise in modern parlance is unheard of. You know, that's MCU. Ridiculous. That's the thing. You know, the MCU is not technically the same thing.
Well, I mean, you have how many Jurassic Park movies have there been?
Five.
Wow. Just only five? For some reason, I think it was more than that, but you have MCU that's like 20 movies. You have Fast and the Furious has got nine movies. I mean, for a show that centers around testosterone and nitrous oxide, you're right. That is a pretty big deal. Ashley, you ever watched this F9 or the Fast and the Furious series?
No, I was an actual child when it started. And then I was not a man. So I will say, just for me personally, right. it holds little appeal outside of the meme content. I'm very here for the meme game right now.
Yeah, for the family memes.
Yeah, yeah. Totally.
The last one that I watched was Tokyo Drift, and I really, really liked that one. And I was like, I don't think I need to watch any more of these.
You know, the Fast and the Furious. Okay, so you know how there's sometimes not very much diversity in something like the MCU?
Oh, sure.
Because it's like this legacy. Obviously, like, well, all the characters were white in the 60s, so that's what we're putting on screen. Fast and the Furious is kind of weirdly the opposite of that. Mm-hmm. It's a very diverse franchise, and they've written out one white person because he just kind of was in one movie, and then another one died.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like now it's like an all minority led franchise, and it just kind of happened.
Yeah,
and I'm like, well, it's worth supporting just for that, as wacky and, you know, dumb as it can be. It's like, it's basically the only major franchise like this that has you know, Black people, Latinos, and Asians in it, without a like main white protagonist. It's something.
Yep. Matthew, did I get an indication that you watched the Forever Purge?
Purge movies fall under that particular love-hate relationship I have with what I like to call trash cinema. So yeah,
Oh, so I guess we're gonna get a review of that in the near future.
The only that's the thing.
Let's talk about another movie franchise that has had at least 9 movies, Ashley.
Yeah, no, there's only 2, and the Alien Queen is a feminist icon. But Vanity Fair has confirmed that Ellen Ripley will not appear in the upcoming Alien, if you couldn't tell from the context clues, television series. According to showrunner Noah Hawley, quote, "It's not a Ripley story. She's one of the greatest characters of all time, and I think the story has been told pretty perfectly, and I don't want to mess with it. It's a story that's set on Earth also. The alien stories are always trapped in a prison, trapped in a spaceship. I thought it would be interesting to open it up a little bit so that the stakes of what happens if you can't contain it are more immediate," end quote. There's no word on when the series is going to be arriving on the FX network. However, Noah Hawley was supposed to be working on a Star Trek movie. Now he's working on an Alien TV show. Hmm. And so the thing I'm most interested in, I could give or take whether or not Ripley's in it. If it's not going to be Sigourney, I don't really care. I want to see how much of this is just ported over from that Star Trek.
Oh, that would be very interesting. Now, when it gets to, you know, aliens, the alien xenomorphs on Earth, that always concerns me just a little bit because I guess we've seen what the aliens do, and we know that it's just basically in game for Earth. There was the Starship Troopers series that turned into an animated series in the late 90s and early 2000s, where they actually had the bugs come to Earth, and that was not a good thing for the humans. So I don't know how this would play. But Matthew, what are your thoughts on no Ellen Ripley in an alien TV series?
I'm actually sort of fine with no Ellen Ripley because, you know, I don't think they're going to be able to get Sigourney back. And I feel like recasting that part would be really tough. But more importantly, I feel like he actually pointed out one of the big problems with reboots, where he's like, okay, so Alien is always this. So my question is, what if not, though? And you're like, okay, but how is that still part of the concept of Alien? No, it's different. It's not that. And I'm like, yes, but the reason why Alien is always trapped in a prison or in an enclosed space or in a place where you can deal with it is because literally the point of Alien is keeping them from spreading.
Yeah.
Because once they start spreading, they won't stop. Well, so you're literally going to have to nerf the aliens if you're going to pull this off. Cat, just get down.
Just have them turn into never mind. I was going to say something mean, but
gonna nerf them.
No, yeah, somehow. Rodrigo, what are your thoughts on this? Because I don't know if this coincided with the Vanity Fair thing, but all of a sudden, the whole Weyland-Yutani capitalism thing seemed to run alongside this story.
I think a big part of that was like somebody had this like blazing hot take online that was like, people watch Aliens. Like, people watch Aliens, like, one comment, like, oh, Ellen Ripley's cool. This is a fun action movie. Yes, do this. And then, like, another comment is like, Weyland Yutani, this is about capitalism. Weyland Yutani's evil and blah, blah, blah. And he's like, no, this is stupid. Don't do that to movies. So people were just having a field day, basically making fun of that take.
Okay.
So that's kind of why Weyland Yutani was trending and not because of its takeover of Yo-Yo Dine.
Oh, okay. Right. I was curious on that. It just was really weird. It's like, oh, is this what people are all upset about? Conflating Ellen Ripley as an action hero with the capitalistic message hidden behind Weyland Yutani. And so thanks for clearing that up.
Yeah.
I guess I need to know your memes a little bit more.
Don't look for messages in your fiction.
Right. So people were like, oh, yeah, it's like, boom, RoboCop. Yay. Boom, boom, boom. Not, you know. Yeah, you guys, you know what I'm talking about.
Speaking of no more messages in my fiction,
media.
There's not going to be no Lovecraft Country season 2. HBO has announced it will not move ahead with a second season of Lovecraft Country. HBO wasn't really clear on why they weren't following up on the second season, but showrunner Misha Green is letting everyone in on what might have been by taking to Twitter and sharing bits and pieces of the season 2 Bible. The second season would have been set in a new world that featured a United States that was divided into four sections: the tribal nations of the West, the White Lands, which is full of zombies, the New Negro Republic, and the Jefferson Commonwealth. The interesting thing was, apparently it was going to focus on the tribal nations of the West, the New Negro Republic, and the Jefferson Commonwealth trying to contain the White Lands. And maybe there was the whole issue of there's already a lot of zombie stuff. Misha Green even kind of said there may have been too many zombie things, and that's why HBO was passing on that. But if you are a fan of the first season of Lovecraft Country, the way I am, Green has posted all of the scripts that you can download and check out at MishaGreen.com. I'm kind of upset that there was no Lovecraft Country, but at the same time, the book was finite. Matt Ruff never created a second volume, and that book has been out for 8 years now, I want to say. So if there was going to be a follow-up, he had plenty of time to do that. I really enjoyed what they did with the television series. Rodrigo, do you have some thoughts on No Lovecraft Country season 2?
Yeah, it's really arcane. You can't really tell how well something did in streaming platforms that just don't release any real numbers.
Mm-hmm.
So it's tough to know if it did as well as something else that is being continued. But also, when you look at the stuff that they were planning on doing, those are some big swings. And I wonder if HBO was like, well, maybe we're not ready to put the New Negro Republic on the on TV.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly could be that. I know that there's several conspiracy theories floating around that HBO was concerned that they were portraying all the bad guys as white, and that HBO was like, oh, we're going to lose a bunch of subscribers that way. But I have no way of knowing that. I think Misha Green, who was the showrunner and wrote several episodes and won a couple of awards, actually, if I'm not mistaken, she has a really good handle of that. And I'm sure if everyone continues to follow her Twitter, she'll release more information going forward. But the acting was really great in that show. For those of you who haven't seen it, Journey Smollett was fantastic in that show. And, she's done a bunch of other stuff since then, but I think that was the one where people, in addition to Birds of Prey, really sat up and took notice of what she was doing. So there you go. Rodrigo, why don't you round out the news for us this week?
Right. From the not so crazy, but still a rumor department, comes word that LeBron James might be the next major skin to be added to the Fortnite video game. Those of you who don't play video games, don't freak out. That just means that he's going to be like a playable character.
They're not going to skin him.
They're not going to skin LeBron James. That's fine. According to Hypex and Sheena, two data miners that have made previous Fortnite discoveries, those who follow the King's Bling quests will be able to unlock the LeBron character. This does make some sense, as Space Jam: A New Legacy is set to release on July 16th, and WB is no stranger to adding its properties to the game to promote upcoming events.
And Marvel is the same way. They did that with Avengers Endgame.
Yeah.
But most recently, this week, DC wraps up the Batman Fortnite 0 point crossover event. So it would not surprise me if we saw this happen in the game.
I think Fortnite is still the like number one game, certainly in its categories, but possibly the number one most downloaded game. So everybody's elbowing each other to get their properties into Fortnite. I think they did a Rick and Morty thing. They did a Street Fighter thing.
Yeah, they did a Snake Eyes G.I. Joe thing.
Yeah, I think maybe Bethesda got in with like a Fallout thing, or that might have just been some mods I saw.
Very cool. Listeners, you can join the conversation about these stories and all sorts of other things over on our Discord server. Yes, we have one. I keep saying it every week, and we want to see more of you get over there. Now maybe is the week where you finally sit up and go, yeah, maybe I am going to check out that Discord server. Steven, where's a link to the Discord server? Well, look at your app. It's right there in the show notes. You just click on that. That'll launch your Discord server app. You can come in and say hello to all the wonderful people that are hanging out there waiting to share all their cat gifts with you. Maybe you want to talk about comic books. Maybe you want to talk about movies or television. Maybe you want to talk about sports. Whatever, there is a channel for just about everything you're interested in on the Major Spoilers Discord. Everyone is super nice over there, so don't be afraid. Don't feel nervous or scared about going in and introducing yourself. Joining the Discord server is completely free, but if you are a patron over at patreon.com/majorspoilers, you can link your Discord account and your Patreon account together, and that will unlock even more channels for you to access. It was kind of funny because there were a couple of people this past week who were like, I guess I have never really added my Discord and my Patreon together. And suddenly they were like, oh my gosh, look at all this other stuff that's there. And so they're able to come in and listen to us record Dueling Review live, join in on the GM roundtable, and a whole lot more. If you want to find out how you could do that, head over to our Patreon page, patreon.com/majorspoilers. All right. It is review time, and we have some things to review. And Ashley, I'm going to start with you because I have some thoughts on this. This is the new Steven Soderbergh movie. It's No Sudden Move that came out this past week on HBO Max. I finally had a chance to sit down and watch it, but I have thoughts.
Yeah, we watched this, and we watched the movie I just want to call The Kents, that Kevin Costner, Diane Lane movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Let him go. Yeah.
Right. Okay, sorry.
Yeah. Also, shame on Hollywood for trying to convince us Diane Lane isn't still an absolute babe, because she is
hotter than donut grease, my friends.
But she's not in No Sudden Move. Don Frank Cheadle Jr., Kansas City's favorite son, is in No Sudden Move. And it is a gangster mafia movie, I guess.
Little corporate espionage.
Yes. I like mafia movies. Jason Inman, who I watch this with, does not like mafia movies. So this was a real interesting undertaking for us. And it follows two kind of minor gangsters in Detroit as it's sort of up to your interpretation, either outsmart or failed their way upward into what eventually becomes a commentary about car exhaust and pollution, which I didn't see coming, but I wasn't mad about. Brendan Fraser also moonlights in it. Like, Kieran Culkin is in it. It is a stacked cast.
Matt Damon is in there.
Matt Damon, the good kid from Shazam, is in this. And I have to tell you, I had very low expectations for this movie. And other than the weird lens, this is shot with a lens that would have been used at the time period when the movie is set, which is a cool gag. But if, like me, you're streaming this at home, the way it's stretched out for a television, it kind of gives it a fisheye lens, which after a while I just sort of ignored. My understanding from other reviews is that if you see it in the cinema, it's very cool and effective. But if you're watching, I'm assuming a lot of people who might be interested in this will be watching it at home. Mm-hmm. What I thought was really cool about this is because crime and like mafia or mafia adjacent stories have been kind of done to death. Like, mafia stories were put to bed, in my opinion, with The Godfather, and then buried in the ground, like the cement truck was backed over them with The Sopranos. Like, it's really hard to do something kind of new and innovative with them. And by having the two leads be Don Cheadle and Benicio del Toro, unfortunately, because the world is the way it is, that's a pretty good way to do something different with this. Don Cheadle, in my opinion, really like runs away with the movie. And if you only know him as Rhodey, who, even though he got his spine shattered, is still pretty focused and upbeat and driven his turn in this as Curtis Goines is like really, really good. And it was like a, it was a nice reminder of why he's an Academy Award nominated actor. Like, he's a tour de force in it. And then everyone else, like David Harbour plays, I don't know, kind of a
an
fall
accountant.
Guy in it. Like,
yeah.
Pretty unlikable character, but like, he's great in it. And I just think everything in this movie was really awesome. It is a tight 2 hours, which the older I get, the more I'm coming to appreciate in a post Snyder Cut world. And it's nice to be reminded that even big movies on big scales like this movie has a ton of money and like CAA behind it, you can still do something really interesting and really worthy of all of the power behind it. And you don't have to always be complacent in that, because sometimes in the movie making machine, it feels a little cut and paste sometimes. And I just thought No Sudden Move is like the coolest movie I've seen in a long time. And I kind of wish that it would get the audience it deserves in the larger cinematic sphere, but I think enough people have HBO Max. And it's just also just a masterclass from Steven Soderbergh. Like, even though there's a bit of warping, the movie looks great at every turn. And I will say, whoever dressed the sets, good job on that art.
Yeah,
director.
Really, really good. Really, I mean, great. This really feels like a 1950s movie, right?
Yeah.
With the way that the interior sets are decorated, the clothes that people are wearing. I think they shot this in Detroit. So that gives another thing. Steven, speaking of the lens, it's a square lens. So there is masking that goes on top of the bottom.
I should have known that you would know.
But it's actually, I only knew it because I listened to Steven Soderbergh talking on WTF with Mark Maron. And Mark pointed it out. And Soderbergh is like, yeah, this is like not a 90 millimeter lens. This is a 90 degree lens. And I think it's anamorphic too, but it causes this weird stretching that if you're looking at something straight on, everything looks normal. But the minute that the camera starts moving or panning, which is something that cameras didn't really do in the 50s, then yeah, it's like a weird accordion warping thing that goes on as something moves across the screen. But Soderbergh said the reason why he wanted to use that is because he wanted you to see the environment from a very different angle, from a wider angle. Like, if you're at a corner, you can see things coming at you from both sides in that. Even though that's really cool, I found it super distracting for about the first half of the movie. But then all of a sudden, once you start getting into what is this document that these guys have and you start unveiling the bigger story, then I think it really clicks as a movie. And you really need to pay attention because there are people that don't know what this document is, such as Ray Liotta's mafia guy who keeps calling it a Cadillac convertible.
Yeah.
And so you really have to, at that point, need to start focusing on what's going on and who's trying to double cross who and how it all comes around. And then I think that there are some times where you do get a little bit distracted by the actors. Like I mentioned, what's his name? Matt Damon shows up, as he does in a lot of Soderbergh movies. And it's just like, oh, hey, there's Matt Damon. Oh, what are they talking about again? Kind of thing. But I forgot you had mentioned Brendan Fraser. And I was like, yeah, I remember seeing his name in the credit. Who was he? And so
he
Doug
Jones.
Yeah, he plays a heavy set guy in this movie. And I was like, holy cow, that does not look anything like him. But I agree with Ashley. This is something that you should probably be streaming and watching as soon as you possibly can. What's the bottom rating that you're giving this, Ashley?
Oh, I mean, 5 out of 5. I loved it the whole way through. And having recently watched the Rick and Morty heist episode, it was even funnier to me at certain points.
Yeah. All right, Rodrigo, let's flip from movies to TV. And I'm very curious on your review of this, because the youngest and I sat down and we watched the first episode and we both really kind of liked it.
Yeah. The Mysterious Benedict Society is a show that is on Disney Plus, but you might not have heard of it because it came out either the week prior to or after or exactly when Loki premiered.
Yeah.
So I feel that I think, you know, this kind of like Lemony Snicket's like kid adventure show is kind of in the wheelhouse of, you know, Major Spoilers and the people that we talk to online and everything. But it's like really gone under the radar, I think, because of the MCU stuff that's been coming out. But so I sat down and I watched it. I literally was like, do I want to watch Loki again, like the 3 episodes that are out, or do I want to watch the show, which looks interesting and has, you know, Buster from Arrested Development. So I was like, okay, well, I'm going to watch the show. And I was kind of really surprised at how much, at a lot of the stuff that's going on in here. So the premise is that there is this this thing called the emergency. Everybody knows about it. The emergency is coming. It's happening. And as it turns out, the emergency is made up and it's causing big problems because major like social and governmental institutions have been dismantled. They can't deal with it. And there's all of this like talk nonsense that distorts and hides the truth of things. And so this guy, Mr. Benedict, recruits a team of bright, empathetic children who are then sent sort of in an undercover mission to investigate where this is happening, because it just so happens that the source of this is a private school that's out on an island, right? So they masquerade as students, you know, or really they just enroll as students and they're trying to find out what's going on. It's like, obviously it has some very timely themes. And it's interesting to see, because again, I have seen very little about people talking about this. Mm-hmm. So I looked some stuff up and I saw an article from the Hollywood Reporter just rating it, right? Just as a review. And they said that a lot of the stuff that the good guys are talking about sounds like right-wing propaganda. And it's interesting because it could, right? If you're just listening to it, if you're, you know, it could be seen either way, except for, you know, a few things like, you know, the focus on empathy, the focus on really like both personal well-being and like collective relationships, you know, your friends, your family, your community, the people around you. While when the kids get to the institute, like it's all about sort of individual and the individual being like, what do they say? Like not rel. It's like the individual serving, right? It's like you have to be useful. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting because it's a show and they have to like introduce interesting, fun things. You know, it's all done through like subliminal messages and like kind of more sci-fi stuff. And it, you know, sort of makes those themes harder to latch on to sometimes. And honestly, the majority of the time, it's a show about like four really smart kids, like solving puzzles and like sneaking around and having fun adventures. So there's a lot there, but you only really have to engage with as much as you like. Obviously the kids are great. It's a fantastic cast. It also stars Kristen Schaal. Like I said, last name's Hale and it just disappeared from my brain. But
Tony Hale.
Yeah. So plus a couple other the adult faculty of the Benedict Society. There's a couple other ones that I hadn't seen before. And everybody does a really great job. It's very well paced. The mysteries, like in every episode, you unravel a little bit of the mystery. It feels like you're getting somewhere. Visually, it's kind of a it's like very Wes Anderson-y.
Yeah, that's my think, is that it looks very much like Lemony Snicket's or Wes Anderson. And if you like that aesthetic, great. But it seems like a lot of kids shows these days are using that aesthetic for their
look. It's like it's an easy way to it's kind of an easy way to get you to stop paying attention to that stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
In like in a very overt way, is like this is this big anachronistic thing. Don't worry about the time period, right? It's like you can tell that there are no cell phones. You can tell that, you know, there's no internet. And that's all you need to know, right? So this can take place anywhere from like 1979 to like 1950, going backwards. So it's interesting. It's it gives the show a kind of a distinct look. But I agree that that look is kind of popular right now. It's not very Wes Anderson-y in the way that it's shot. It's actually very much shot like a, you know, single camera, like adventure kind of a thing. You don't get a lot of like people sitting in a, like perfectly centered in a giant room, or, you know, exploring sort of like those big open themes visually. All of the cinematography and the effects really are there to serve kind of like the adventure narrative. And there's some cool visual like effects about there are times when like multiple kids are asked to solve the same problem, and the way that they solve them is often illustrated with visual effects, right? So there's a thing where they have to like make their way through a maze. So they cut to one kid and you can see him mapping out the maze in his brain. You cut to another kid, they're doing something else. And so there's a different effect, or maybe no effect, right? So that's all fun. I enjoy that. Altogether, it's been a very good watching experience. I watched the first episode, there were two more, and I was like, I just want to watch more of this. You know, it's like, it's cute, it's family friendly, and it's got some like big ideas that I think are important right now. I'm actually going to give it 4.5 slices of meatloaf.
Nice.
It's good television, and I think that everybody's sleeping on it.
Yeah, I think so too. I think one of the nice things about it, especially for younger viewers, is it shows that there are different ways that you can solve problems.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And number two, I think it also gets into being kind to other people.
Yeah.
I think are two really big themes that we got just from the first episode. Like, just kind of a not spoiler. There's a kid named, what's his name? Reynard. He has to go and take this test. And while he's getting ready to walk into a building, another girl drops her pencil down a hole. And the only thing you can bring into the test is a pencil. And everybody's only been
exactly
one pencil. And yeah. Reynard looks down there and the girl's like, oh no, if I don't go into this test, my life will be ruined. And he thinks, and he's like, oh, okay, well, and he snaps his pencil in half and gives her half and him half. And he's able to go in and take the test. And she's also like, well, I'm going to cheat. You should cheat with me. And he's like, no, I'm not going to cheat. And he's the only one in the class that is able to move forward because he does an act of kindness, and also because he doesn't cheat. And so I think those kind of little messages, if those run throughout the entire series, I think are a good plus.
Yeah, the show has, and I think this comes from the book, the show has all of these puzzle moments, right? Where you yourself get to look at the puzzle and try to figure out a way to solve it. And then they show you multiple ways that the kids attack it. The kids are also smart in different ways. Like, there's a kid who's mechanically smart, right? Who's like very able with like stuff and machinery and finding physical solutions to problems. There's another kid who is just like has a very high retention. So he knows a lot of facts, right? And all of these kids are important, and they all get their chance to shine. So it also shows you there's lots of different ways to be intelligent, lots of different ways to help your friends. It's got a lot of good, you know, warm, fuzzy messages to it that I think are very relevant right now.
Oh yeah, very much so. Very much so. So thank you for that, Rodrigo. Now let us jump into some comic books. And I'm afraid, Matthew, I'm afraid of what you're going to say about IDW Publishing's G.I. Joe Snake Eyes Dead Game #5 from everyone's favorite comic book writer and artist, Rob Liefeld.
Be afraid, Stephen. Be very afraid.
Here's the deal. Stephen and I covered Snake Eyes Dead Game #1 several months ago on our Dueling Review podcast. One of the five.
I have zero recollection. I have zero recollection.
That's the reason. There's a reason for that, and I'll get to that in just a moment. But the thing about it is, okay, so here's the deal. Imagine that Snake Eyes. Snake Eyes is nearly 40 years old now. I have a personal relationship with Snake Eyes in that I was one of the 11-year-old kids dying to get the Snake Eyes action figure in 1982. And Snake Eyes is like this super, super ninja. And people are like, yeah, he's like Batman. I'm like, no, he's not. He's a freaking soldier. Shut up. But this book, Snake Eyes, Dead Game, is part of a larger IDW G.I. Joe universe. There are some great books to be had in that larger G.I. Joe universe. And I want you to maybe look for them. Things that are written by Larry Hama, good stuff. There was a recent run where they did a revamp of G.I. Joe and kind of a postmodern take. Pretty good stuff. And also this comic. So this issue opens with something that I don't feel like is necessarily a huge betrayal, but it is unusual to me. Snake Eyes is known for being a silent character. Due to injury and or, you know, ninja training, he never speaks. This issue is narrated by Snake Eyes. Now, it's narrated as in the form of a typed out report where he talks about, you know, these are the things that happened on my mission and everything that happened. And I was in the mountains, in the Himalaya mountains, fighting a god with the hammer of Thor. Now, I had to pause there for just a moment because even saying it, I was just like, man, what? Okay, so Snake Eyes is fighting a god with the hammer of Thor. Also, Destro and the Baroness are practicing their clarinets, and they are here to try and steal the hammer of Thor and the sword of, I don't know, some guy who is an evil undead red ninja that Steven does not remember from that story.
Is it Carnage? I'm pretty sure it's Carnage.
But the undead ancient red ninja also has a super, super cute half-naked yellow ninja daughter who is being written in and suddenly is a huge part of Snake Eyes' backstory. After he trained to be a ninja with the Arashikage clan, he went and hung out with this girl, and that's why he is considered worthy to handle the Hammer of Thor. And so he's fighting with the Hammer of Thor, and there's a lot of fighting. There are some really... what's the word I'm looking for? Courageous two-page spreads. There are some moments that really just stick out as I'm going to draw this awesome double-page combat spread, and it's going to be killer, and it's going to be awesome. And there are a lot of those. And this book does not have a lot of what I would consider, what's the word I'm looking for? Backgrounds. So as we go through the story, I want to point out something about the credits of this book. Written, as the story is credited to Robert W. Liefeld Jr., the script is attributed to Chad. Chad also did the dialogue, and Rob did the pencils. And for reasons which could be awesome or could be scary, there are 21 credited inkers on this comic book. What I think actually happened was this is a big throw out all the thing, kick out the jams, pull out the stops. We're going to have everybody come in. Anybody who's a cool G.I. Joe fan gets to ink a page of Rob's story. Because there's people in here like, you know, Carl Kiesel, Jerry Ordway, Ryan Ottley, Wills Portaccio, names that you would know who have inked a page of Rob's story, which, as I mentioned, is Snake Eyes fighting an undead god with a hammer of Thor. The Hammer of Thor gets shattered, but Snake Eyes, being brilliant, stabs the undead god with it. Somehow that kills him, and the story ends with Snake Eyes looking into the camera and going, because he doesn't talk. And I got to tell you, there are some big swings being taken here, artistically, creatively, you know, just in terms of the guts it took to put this together, the amount of chutzpah, of awesome that went into this. Definitely people they wanted to make this a memorable book, but it's memorable for me in many of the wrong ways, because what story we get is sort of, okay, there's a bad guy and the bad guy is dead, except that he's not. And Snake Eyes, you know, basically kicks him until he dies, which again, simple story is not a problem. The dialogue is very, very overwritten. Destro is in this. Destro, you may remember as the guy with the steel face. Under the pencils of Rob Liefeld, he's the guy with the steel face and like 52 teeth and a huge, huge smile. And
I got to tell you, this comic is not for me. As I've mentioned, there are great G.I. Joe comics coming out from IDW. This comic is just not for me. It's just kind of a mess. It feels like the last 10 minutes of a movie that should have two robots and Joel Hodgson out in the audience. And I don't want to be cruel. I don't like to be cruel. I don't like to say, hey, this book is bad. And I can't necessarily say that it's objectively bad because people love Rod Liefeld's art. But I went through this and I'm like, this scene doesn't make sense after this scene, and the sequence just doesn't make sense. And these people are, you know, saying 15, 20 minutes of dialogue while floating in midair, and Snake Eyes talks, and it's just, it doesn't feel like a Snake Eyes story or a G.I. Joe story. And I feel like the biggest problem for me is if this book was redrawn and the main character were Shaft or Task or Risk or Pavement or Dump Truck or Paycheck or one of the guys from Youngblood, it would not change the story a whit. There's nothing about this issue that needs to be a Snake Eyes story. This is a Rob Liefeld story where Snake Eyes is drawn as the main protagonist. And I think that's my biggest problem with it. I can't say that it's terrible, that it's without merit, because again, mileage will vary. For me, 1.5 slices of meatloaf for Snake Eyes and dead game, dead end game. Number 5, I'm sad, you guys. I'm Why? Sad, and I need a hug.
Yeah, that's rough.
Sometimes you read a book and you're like, they really wanted this to be memorable and amazing, and they really went to the trouble of trying to kick everything into 15th gear and make it all just over the top amazing, and it doesn't land on any level for me, and that's kind of frustrating, and that's kind of sad.
Yeah, I can understand that, but you know, on the plus side, you can go and check out Rob Liefeld's The Shield over there on Archie Comics. Maybe you'll have some varying thoughts on that. Maybe they'll be more positive.
Are you threatening me?
I mean, maybe. Here's something that I think everybody will get a kick out of. It's Red Sonja Black White Red, number 1, out this week from Dynamite Entertainment. This is not the first time that Dynamite has done the black, white, and other color story, especially when it relates to Red Sonja. This one, though, has writers Kurt Busiek, Mark Russell, and Amanda Dibert all providing some stories with some really cool art from Benjamin Dewey, Bob Q, and Kat Staggs. 3 different stories, all featuring Red Sonja doing different things. By far, my favorite one is the one where Red Sonja ends up in a prison, and you've got these other prisoners that are like, no, you know who we're being held captured by? The Great Sorcerer Man. We all love this. All those other people who have died just didn't know how great they had it here. And then, you know, Sonja breaks out of the jail and she's wandering around, and all the prison guards are like, oh yes, we love our Great Sorcerer Man. And all the people in the castle are like, oh, the leader of this area is fantastic. And come to find out that they're all just been kind of brainwashed, and also brainwashed themselves into thinking that even though this horrible person is doing horrible things, not only to them and to their people, but he is a great person. And I really kind of dug that story overall. There's one where she fights an invisible monster that feels very much out of a classic Conan tale. And there's another one where Red Sonja draws out a bunch of bandits that are tracking her. And she ends up taking care of them. It is a wonderful little grouping of stories. I think that the art is fantastic. The fact that it's mostly black and white with splashes of red, either Red Sonja's hair or all the blood that she is letting out on all of the people that she murders in this book, kind of make that fairly apparent. But it's very pretty to look at. The stories are super competent. Mark Russell just finished a run on Red Sonja just recently for Dynamite Entertainment. I think this maybe the first time I've ever read Kurt Busiek doing a Red Sonja tale, but his is really good as well. This is just a well put together book. 3 great stories. I think it's worth picking up for $4.99. It's out this week from Dynamite Entertainment. I'm giving it 4 slices of meatloaf out of 5. It was just really enjoyable and refreshing to read some Red Sonja books this week. So there you go. And dear listeners, there you go. There are some reviews for you to look forward to, some movies and television and comic books that are all available right now as you're listening to this. And hey, you know what? Do us a favor. If you are over on the Major Spoilers website, and maybe you want to pick up a couple of these comics that Matthew and I were just talking about, either the Snake Eyes Dead Game or the Red Sonja Black, White, and Red number one, or just, it's not and red, it's just Black, White, Red.
Black, White, Red.
You can click on that Comixology banner at the top of the page. And when you go and make a purchase through that link, that's an affiliate link that we have. A little bit of money comes back our way and helps the cause. Likewise, when you look at any review that we have on the Major Spoilers website, unless it's from a couple of companies that don't deal with Comixology, I will usually put a little link right under the cover of that review of the comic that's being reviewed that you can click on. And then also that'll take you right to the Comixology page where you can make that purchase. And again, a little bit comes back our way. So thanks, Comixology, for having that affiliate program and asking us to be a part of it. And I would encourage you to head over to majorspoilers.com every day for even more reviews. I, you know, Ashley talked a little bit about Black Widow, the movie coming out this, is it this weekend in theaters and on the Disney Pluses?
Yes, that is a true thing.
And Ashley had some thoughts about this. And so why not, since everyone else is now doing a Black Widow tie-in, how about we finally get around to reviewing and taking a look at Black Widow, Shield's Most Wanted, that I think we originally had scheduled like last year. Or maybe it was a year and a half ago on the Major Spoilers podcast, but we kept bumping it because we were like, we should probably wait until the movie comes out. Well, the movie's here, and now here's Black Widow's Shield's Most Wanted from Mark Waid and Chris Samnee. Matthew and I did review the very first issue of this on the Dueling Review show. I do remember that one, Matthew.
I have no memory of this comic.
You don't? Because what I remember about this is because the first issue was basically your trailers before the opening credits kind of scene where Black Widow is busting out of SHIELD HQ. I was totally into the book just because of all the action that we are presented with in that first issue. And the fact that it is so few words and it really lets Chris Samnee's art shine. And that to me is kind of how the rest of the book went. Ashley, what's going on in this book?
So you've seen Nat be a spy. You've seen Nat kiss Matt's face. Now see Nat run.
Run, Nat, run.
And it's honestly pretty great.
Yeah, it really is.
It gives me that like classic James Bond feel where like half of the movie is folks running around and shooting at each other. And I am truly not mad about it one bit.
Yeah,
it's and then, like, other cameos, but mostly Nat runs.
This is one of those books where we kind of get a little bit more backstory about Black Widow when she was part of the Red Room organization and being trained as an assassin and having the past come back and haunt her. So maybe a little bit like Skyfall in a sense that way. And then we also get to see how her actions in present day are affecting her relationship with SHIELD. And by the end of this issue, her relationship with Tony Stark. I don't know what happens in the second arc of this run, if she also has to go and talk with Clint or go and talk with other people that she has interacted with through her life. But that's kind of what's going on in here is let's go back to Russia and let's see what's going on there. And let's find out who, you know, what this information is that she's been tasked with stealing from SHIELD and what's going on. Did you like this story, Matthew? Is it starting to come back to you?
I did. I remember the book. It was just a joke, but yes. I think the most fascinating part about this is not necessarily the setup, but as Ashley said, it's a lot of action. And it's one of those, it's almost like an exercise of, can we do six issues of constant forward motion? Can we have this character constantly on the run, constantly on the move, you know, dodging Iron Man, dodging being stabbed in the gut, dodging, you know, evil guys who think they're lions, going through all of this stuff, and then also taking in the flashbacks to the Red Room. And the answer turns out to be, yep. And they do it really, really well. It reads so fast, but it's not because it's bad. It's not because it's slight. It's because this is a story that goes fast. This is a story that, you know, you couldn't tell in any other place. You couldn't tell this story as effectively as all words. You couldn't tell it necessarily as a cartoon, because even if you have that forward motion, you wouldn't necessarily have that, you know, the thing that comic books can do, which is dun 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 dun, dun, and then we jump dun 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 dun, 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 and it makes perfect sense. Plus, you know, Samnee,
SAMD is amazing.
Oh, yeah. Amazing. I was going through all of my original art and found a couple of original Chris SAMD. I don't know if they were commissions that I had him do or if they were just ones that he had done when he was doing his Art a Day series a couple of years ago and he was just turning around and selling those. But it just, you know, holding his art in your hand and just looking at it, and it's like, oh, this is amazing stuff. This looks so cool. This is just beautiful. And then being able to see it with color in the pages of this trade is just, you know, breathtaking. The way he does the double, the and I think back to in the first issue where she's jumping out of the SHIELD headquarters and everything has this kind of retro feel to it. But this giant double page spread that he has of the SHIELD helicarrier, and you just see this little line coming out to show how tiny Nat is as she's falling through the sky. Just breathtaking. Rodrigo, I don't know how you feel about the art in this book, but I love it.
Yeah, it's really good. It's very enjoyable. Lots of, you know, there's a lot of sort of artistic decisions in this, like the flashbacks are red, which then means, which then get superimposed, right? So as Black Widow's walking through her old headquarters, I guess, she will like look over and there will be like a little like red version of her doing something, and that will lead to like a flashback, which is red, right? So there's a lot of the art sort of facilitates this like kind of back and forth movement between the what's happening now and what happened then.
Yeah, I'm curious, Matthew, and maybe Ashley, you do too, because I know this week on Geek History Lesson, you guys did a deep dive into Black Widow.
You better believe I wrote that episode in December of 2019.
Is there a bunch of retconning going on as far as her past story, or is this pretty much let's expand upon stuff that we already know about?
Yes. Well, the thing that you have to remember is that the Red Room itself is a relatively recent invention. It's a retcon from the 21st century.
That.
So when you look at, you know, the Black Widow, first of all, her story is, you know, 50, 60 years old. So she's always had this, mysterious past. I think the Red Room stuff dates back to the beginning of Yelena Belova in like 2003.
Marvel, nice. Yeah. That was what our episode this week in Geek History Lesson is on, Yelena, because we did Nat like in year one when we were still recording in our closet.
But you also look at this and, you know, this is building on that established retcon, which, you know, at this point is a decade old. And there's, you know, new moments and establishing new characters and dealing with an old character, the headmistress. But what it really comes down to is with a character like this, you know, the secret Wolverine backstory character, you can always kind of go in and go, and you also didn't know this about me.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels natural because this is a, you know, she's designed to be a spy. She keeps things close to the vest. And, you know, when you start the series with an issue that's basically the main character falling 40,000 feet to the streets of Manhattan, you can kind of get away with a little bit of retconning in of, hey, here's this character Anya that she used to have a problem with now.
Yeah. I didn't know, you know, especially the headmistress or the guy that is teaching her to shoot and using the weapons. Mm-hmm. I didn't know if those were established characters or if those specifically were like characters introduced specifically for this series or what.
The headmistress definitely predates this series. The original headmistress was part of those original Red Room retcons back in like 2003. Okay. Anya, who takes over as the new headmistress or overtakes whatever it is that she does, is new to this issue or these issues. But it's building on stuff that we had already seen.
Okay. All right. What did you not care for as much, Ashley?
I'm not a huge Black Widow fan as the lead of a series.
Okay.
I see her more as I hate the term anti-hero because the literal definition is a villain, but I see her occupying a little more of that gray area, kind of like Catwoman. Mm-hmm. And I see her more in the larger Avengers landscape, which is not to say that there haven't been great Black Widow stories or whatever, whatever. It just, like, for my taste, when I was like, okay, we're going to sit down and read a Black Widow, that's just never the thing that's going to get me the most excited in the world. So, but that what's good about this book is it's mostly just looking at pretty pictures.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you could really be like Gaston, like, how could you read this? There's no picture. Like, it's the opposite experience of that. But like my enthusiasm level going into it was a little bit lower. Like Wade and Somni are, I believe they're coming off Daredevil into this run. Mm-hmm.
I think you're right.
They're masters at what they do and they're a masterful team. So for me, there's very little not to like besides being like, well, Nat's like not my favorite character in the whole world.
I can understand that. I mean, it is, she is one of those that lurk in the dark kind of characters that probably doesn't need a whole lot of backstory or a whole lot of in-depth development when you think that she's the one that's supposed to be quiet and jump out and take out the bad guy. Like we see at the funeral that what's her name is attending with the elder and she's got to sneak in and take out all those guys. So maybe you don't need to know much more about her. Although I do think that having a little bit of knowledge, especially, and again, I realize that this is a book that came out in 2016. The movie hadn't even been announced yet, but it feels like as you start to explore,
it was surely in the works though. Like,
yeah, but I doubt they set Mark
being negotiated.
I don't think that they set Mark Waid down and said, look, Mark, we want you to write a comic book series that talks about the Red Room and all of these little children that have been trained over the years because we got a movie that's going to be focusing a lot of that. And what is it? Her sister in the movie.
Yelena, and, yeah.
So I don't know, but it just feels like this feels like something that ties very closely to the movies in that sense, if that is clear.
Or the movie is using this and other stories as source material, I think.
Yeah, it could be.
Really? That. The thing that's uncanny about this is this came out in 2016, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so did Captain America: Civil War. And they both use this device where Iron Man is just kind of minding his business. And then he realizes that somebody killed somebody important to him, sort of, right? It's like in this, it's like his mentor guy while he was in, while he was trapped
in a cave with a box of scraps.
Yep. And in Civil War, it was his parents. So it's like they, presciently, uncannily, they both use the same device to get Iron Man mad at a specific character.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what's the bottom line for everybody on this? Is this a must read book? Is this a skip book? Is there something in between? What do you think there, Matthew?
This is pretty solid. I would say that if you were looking for sort of an entry, a gateway to modern Black Widow takes, this would be a very, very solid place to start. You know, it actually called it Wade and Somni work together so seamlessly that, you know, you can't do the whole, well, the artist wrote this and then the drawer drew it. You can't really do that. And Wade has come out and said that he and Chris worked together, wrote it together, plotted it together, put it all together. And I think that comes through on the page. So there are Black Widow stories that I might say I like better.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that if you wanted to know modern Black Widow and get a feel for, you know, modern Black Widow, even though it makes me mad that every single, you know, modern spy story is all about everybody's untrustworthy and everybody's a jerk and everything is corrupt from the middle and rotten to the core and everything is bad and awful and nobody gets to be Derek Flint anymore. You know, there's my age rant right there. This is good. This is very good. And, you know, again, you want Black Widow? This is some pretty good Black Widow, y'all.
Yeah. And I guess I would say that same thing too. I'm sure there's some better stories. I know that there's worse stories that feature Black Widow. But I think, I mean, I'm kind of a Somni and Wade fanboy. So, you know, I'm kind of colored in my opinion on this piece, but this
you're a Wade nerd.
I know it's very well written. The art is fantastic. if you've seen all the appearances of Black Widow in the Marvel movies, I think you will have very little problem coming into this book. So if you're looking to find a book that feels connected with the upcoming movie, I haven't seen an upcoming movie, unlike some people. then I would say that this is probably that good connection point. So I'm going to give it a thumbs up. I'm going to say, go and read it. Rodrigo, what about you?
This is a fun spy thriller, but also we learn almost nothing. And the plot itself is kind of not really advanced by it. Like, this feels like the first act of a spy movie. So because of that, I'd say maybe if you get this and like the next volume together, pick it up. But it's worth getting from your library for the art. Definitely.
Yeah, definitely. And Ashley, we're going to give you the final word on Black Widow.
I would say that this is definitely worth checking out, particularly if you're not super familiar with Black Widow in the comics. This is a really clean, easy entrance point, and it is a beautiful story to behold. I would say either borrow it from a friend or use that sweet affiliate link that we have on Comixology. Mm-hmm. And if you like it, there are more volumes that you can get into, and then you can do some Googling or listen to us scream on any past episode with further recommendations. But I think this is a solid check it out if you are interested in the character, if you want to do some prep work, a movie, or if you see the movie and you're like, maybe I do want to dive into the comic. I think this is a really nice spot for a modern fan who's maybe not as familiar.
Well said, Ashley. Well said. And also, for those of you who are looking for a physical copy of this book, there is a link to the Amazon affiliate link in the show notes that you can click on. Again, more people need to use that Amazon affiliate link. It really does help us out every time you make a purchase. There's a link on the front page of the Major Spoilers website. I know some people, like my wife, automatically just bookmarks her Amazon page through that link. So whenever she goes to Amazon, she just clicks on that. And so a little bit comes back for every purchase. Doesn't matter if it's toilet paper, doesn't matter if it's deodorant. Oh man, we have this. I don't know if it's through Amazon yet. We have this subscription through Charmin where they send you like this industrial sized roll of toilet paper every month. And it lasts you like literally will last you until the next shipment comes, which is amazing. And I'm pretty sure we get that through Amazon. You can go and check that out over at the affiliate link through the majorspoilers.com website. We thank everybody for that. And again, if you want to buy this physical copy, you can do that there as well. Well, I think we've reached the end of this show. Did everybody have fun tonight? Did you have fun, Ashley?
Always.
Where can people find more of your rantings, including the time that Black Widow was a lingerie model?
That's true. She owned like a $1 million corporation. I wish that was a lie. It's wild. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Ashley V. Robinson. The V is very important. Please share your Black Widow hot takes with me as long as you're friendly about them.
There you go. Matthew, what about you? Where can people find more of you?
You can find me at Mighty V King Cobra. The V is invisible and should not be there or else you won't find me. But you can find just me there like on the Twitter page.
Just like many cobras. You never know they're there until they jump out and bite you.
They just leap up and they're like, oh, and they bite your face.
I always have reoccurring dreams of snakes jumping out and biting me.
You know what that means in a Freudian sense.
What does it mean?
It means you're afraid of snakes.
That's probably what it means. I literally am. I go out and I get up and I work, go out and walk. Since my son now has driving lessons at like 6:30 in the morning, I'm getting up at 4:30 in the morning to start my day. And I go out in the dark and I'm walking near pastures and stuff. And I'm like, and I wonder if there's any rattlesnakes going to just jump out and bite me. Oh, well, that'll solve all my problems if they do. Here, snakey.
What?
So look, I have been doing this. So I've been getting up at 4:30 in the morning for this is now the second week now to start my day. And it's really fascinating. I've learned some amazing things. Would you like to know the number one amazing thing that I have learned in this whole thing, Rodrigo?
Yes.
I'm freaking tired.
Yeah. It takes it out of you, man.
Rodrigo, where can people find more from you?
You can go to Twitter and look for @fearsomecritter. Just like it's spelled. Where I'm probably complaining about Magic the Gathering, Dungeons and Dragons, something else. But I could also potentially be talking about snakes there, too, because they are interesting.
Yeah. Rodrigo had an interesting take on translating video games in Spanish for his mother. So you can go follow him over there as well. And listen, dear listeners, thank you so much for joining us this week. Please spread the word. There's so many ways that you can help Major Spoilers without having to make any kind of financial contribution, although that financial contribution does help us. You can go out and tell your friends about this show. You can retweet things that we do. Some people that like J. Michael T. do this all the time will retweet things that we send out because he's a great fan. You can do that. It doesn't cost you anything. And maybe your followers will come and check us out. You can promote our shows. You can go into our discussions and our chat rooms and chat up other people. Just be a good person. Be a good comic book person when you are out and about. Maybe you are in a comic book shop as they are starting to open back up. And you go in there and people are talking about some of their favorite podcasts. Join in on that conversation. Maybe you'll find some other podcasts that are, you know, maybe a little bit more interesting, but probably not than the Major Spoilers podcast. But then you can tell those people, hey, have you heard the Major Spoilers podcast? Have you heard the Dueling Review podcast? Have you heard the Legion Clubhouse podcast? And I bet those people will become your instant friends once they find out you're part of the Major Spoilers experience.
As always, we love your feedback. So join the rest of the cool kids at the Major Spoiler Discord server to share your thoughts, your reactions, to share the fact that in a dream context, a snake often represents a need for healing or a person or concept that you consider to be untrustworthy or toxic or poisonous, quote unquote, that you may need to cut out of your life and your subconscious mind is telling you things.
Check your email.
To this episode. Also, did you see the cut on my finger?
Or you can drop us a snake, I mean, email to a podcast at majorspoilers.com and you might hear your words on an upcoming episode.
And don't forget, although snakes are traditionally seen as duplicitous, in many cultures are actually sources of healing and wise creatures. And you can support this show and all of our snake talk by becoming a patron at patreon.com/majorspoilers.
We will be back next week when I might even have my youngest son show up because he thinks he wants to be a herpetologist when he grows up.
Ooh.
We might talk about comics because we know that you love comics and we do too. And we will talk with you soon.
Fat the X-ray vision of Superman. I could save a few bucks and stand around and read through the covers of the comics on the stand. But although every other page would be backwards, I suppose I could still read the evens and the odds. Well, I don't know. Guess I haven't thought this all the way through. Plus, as soon as the comic book store guy knew, they kicked my butt out on the corner. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Think about a better way. If I was hulking green or gray, I could just bust through that brick wall, take their comic books away. But then the little meat would deal with all the tanks and bombs and guns. Have you ever tried to read a series with all that going on? Guess I need to rethink this plan. How would I back and board my comics with such huge hands? Guess I already told ya. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. If I'm Stark Raven rich like a man of iron, I might not be surprised to find that I might actually have the heart cold to follow an entire storyline. But would I really even need to read up on all those escapades? I mean, who needs such distractions when your sister's such a babe? But the downside is such a beast. Being shot up in a fun, being in the Middle East with a gang sign throwing soldier. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What a major spoiler. Whoa, 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 whoa. What a major spoiler.
This podcast is copyright 2021 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.